Pat?
Jeff?
Pat?
Jeff?
Pat?
What?
It's Labor Day weekend next weekend.
Yay! We get a day off.
Yeah. You know, nobody really knows what we have Labor Day weekend for.
That's not...
All right, what do we have it for?
In celebration of things labor-related, like...
Like birth?
Like, no. Like 8-hour days.
8-hour days. Is that what we're celebrating?
And no more kids in the factories.
Oh, I used to like the kids when they were in the factories.
Yeah.
All right. Well, most of us think of it as just a day off. An extra day to spend with our loved ones.
Yay, loved ones.
So I took that and I thought, there is no songs for Labor Day.
Huh.
We don't have any.
That's a good point.
Nobody plays Labor Day songs, you know, the week before Labor Day.
Well, you can't wear white after Labor Day.
Is that right?
Right.
I have no idea. How about tidy whities? No can do.
I think they're talking about white pants.
Oh.
White shoes. So you're going to have to stop wearing those white shoes you've been wearing all summer.
Billy White Shoes. Billy White Shoes Johnson.
Yeah, I know. People also look at it as the last time to go to the pool.
The pool?
Yes.
Not in Texas, though. Although they do close public pools down, don't they?
That's what I'm saying.
That's ridiculous. It's not even, doesn't mean anything because it's still hot.
Hot. When I was driving to your house, I looked at the temperature gauge over there at the Walgreens.
Yeah.
100 degrees, baby.
Already. It's only noon. Just the afternoon. Well, anyways, back to the song thing. I wrote a song and I'm hoping to market this and make it the Labor Day song. So every radio station will play this 24/7, perhaps.
So it'll be like the Frosty the Snowman of
Labor Day.
Ah.
And I think it'll make people just more festive about Labor Day in general.
Maybe there'll be Labor Day cards we'll send each other?
Yeah, exactly.
Huh.
I mean, it's a whole area for commercial exploitation that we haven't really done much with.
Wow. I like how you're looking for new frontiers.
New frontiers. It's new. It's opening up my mind and not thinking in the box, but thinking outside of a box.
Well, I want to hear the song. Let's hear it.
Let's play.
Summer's over and it's about time. Been waiting since New Year's to let you know that I'm keeping all my holidays open this year. Labor Day weekend is near. I understood Christmas, you had family. Forgave you Easter, though you excluded me. But my heart's been waiting for you to see that Labor Day weekend was made for you and me. We could go dancing under the lights, or take a trip and see the sights. By the end of 3 days and nights with me, you will be mine. I understood Christmas, you had family. Forgave you Easter, though you excluded me. But my heart's been waiting for you to see that Labor Day weekend wasn't made for just you. Labor Day weekend wasn't made for just me. Labor Day weekend was made for you and me.
Please stand by.
It's the weekend of August 27th, 2005. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Pat.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Pat.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Pat. Welcome to show number 28.
Welcome to our listeners.
It's still hot outside.
Yes, but how do I look to you today? What are you laughing at?
Oh, we need a video camera for this one. I think you're going to talk about this later on, but Pat has breast implants. And she can't help but play with it. She's just sitting there playing and adjusting.
Yes, yesterday I went to Dillard's and I purchased the silicone push-up pads for the feminine curvaceous look I've always wanted.
Wow.
$30.
And she came over and she saw play with them and she said, I think these are upside down.
But then we looked at them and realized that I had them the right way. I was hoping for more cleavage.
I
think I'm more full looking for sure.
Pat's wearing a
very super tight.
A super tight. What do you call it?
Low
scoop thing. And she has cleavage, and Pat doesn't have cleavage normally. So I say, yeah, you got cleavage. What are you complaining about?
Can you, 30 bucks,
you got cleavage.
Can you pay attention to the show? You know, every time you look over, you see my voluptuous cleavage.
If you just stop, like, adjusting yourself 24/7, I mean, my gosh. You'd think you were listening to the Labor Day song 24/7.
It's kind of, you know, the interesting thing about these, we'll post a picture of the pads on the blog, but what's interesting about them is they're pretty soft, but then when you put them on your body, they get kind of, they feel hard.
Huh.
You know?
I wonder why that is.
You felt it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I've got a great big padding thing on in my chest.
Yeah.
But they are kind of fun to squish and play with. Woohoo!
God. So just for fun, I put one in my crotch.
And?
It looked like I had a breast in my crotch, so not going to work.
There's a small downfall to them, and that is they do get a little bit sweaty. Like, I think if I couldn't be outside washing my car, for example, and wear them because they would be all sweaty after a while, and then one might slip out.
And it seems like you have to have the right bra. Like, you can't have too loose of a bra, or they'd come
tumbling down. So, but it does have a shelf, some kind of shelf in here to keep it up.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Women's clothes are so complicated. So, guys out there, you know, when you see a woman, you're going out with her, you know she doesn't really look like that. You don't know what's going on up there. You have no idea, right?
That's right.
I mean, Pat, the guy that goes out with you, he's clueless as to what you've got.
Well, now, hold on there, cowboy. Hold on. I wouldn't wear these on a first date or something like
really?
That. Right. No, these are just for, like, let's say I wanted to
They're
wear
fun.
A plunging neckline and
right.
I'm going out for a party with my friends. Or even if I had a boyfriend. And, you know, by now he knows I'm flat-chested, but I'd still wear them then.
Well, that's fun. So actually, you wouldn't try to be misleading because you know you'd just get in trouble later on.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's probably smart. I don't think it matters. I really don't. I mean, you know.
They have another new product out there I saw on Oprah where the woman was saying, you know, this is a great product out there, but men should be a little bit of worried about it. I'm like, oh, my God, what's she talking about? Well, you can buy this I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's in a container, and you spray it on your legs, and it makes you look like you have stockings on. But she said that all these blemishes go away, so if you're, you know, and you end up looking like you have Barbie doll legs.
Wow.
I don't know if it makes, if it hides cellulite or something like that, but, you know, there you have it.
I'm convinced that, you know, when we're old, 40 years or so from now, we can just step into a machine. And that machine will zap away, and we'll come out 10 minutes later looking like we're 25.
Woo!
That's the way things are going.
Muy fabuloso, as Ferg would say.
Yeah, there you go.
If living is seeing, I'm holding my breath in wonder, I wonder.
Last night, fun was had by all. What'd you do, Jeff?
Well, I saw you guys for coffee.
Of course.
And I also, I saw two movies this week.
Uh-huh. Which ones?
Last night, I saw Grizzly Man.
Oh, yeah.
It's at the Inwood. It's an independent movie. It's a documentary about this guy who lives with the grizzly bears in Alaska about 3-4 months out of every year for the last 10 years.
Wow.
Very intriguing. He ended up getting eaten up by grizzlies at the very end of the season because they were getting hungry.
I heard about that, and I didn't know what it would be like to go see a movie that had that sort of a conclusion.
Well, of course, he didn't see anything like that, but you saw he did a lot of, he had like two video cameras, and he did a lot of shots. In fact, he was almost like shooting a movie. I mean, he would set up shots and go off and then run towards the camera, and very interesting, but you saw this manic depressive guy. And sometimes he would start talking about nature, and he really loved these grizzly bears and foxes. He made friends with foxes, and he had names for everybody. But then you would see in the same scene where he was being very sensitive and sort of, you know, appreciation of nature, then he would go off into a rant against the government. And it was just freaky. And he'd know himself. He'd say, oh, I can't do that. Okay, let me do a second take, you know?
Really? Well, let me ask a question, because there's obviously a director involved in this.
Right.
And how did you get any impression for how the director got involved with this guy? Because, I mean, how did he get the film? Was the director involved during these expeditions?
No, he wasn't. I don't know how he got wind of the story, but he was very involved in the narrative and also interviewing, like, ex-girlfriends and so forth. And you could tell he had developed a relationship, a close relationship with some of these ex-girlfriends, because they were sort of crying together. There was one point where the director, Werner Herzog, had the audio tape of his death, essentially. Mm-hmm. The guy that lives with the grizzlies was recording in the video thing, but had the cover on, the lens cap on. So they had the audio, and Werner was saying, listen, I think you just need to destroy this audio. You can never listen to it, you know, and you can't have it in your house, because it'll always be this bogeyman that's just sitting there. And she, you know, just kind of said he was correct. So they seemed kind of close. So I think he probably found the story fascinating and developed a, you know, kind of a close relationship with some of the people that he was working with on it. This guy, I can't remember his name now, the Grizzly Man, but he was actually on, like, Dave Letterman, and he had a little bit of celebrity towards his last 2 years. And in fact, they showed the interview with Letterman, and Letterman goes, so am I going to read about you in the news being eaten by some grizzly? And he just kind of laughed it off.
Aww.
Well, that's what happened.
But it was a good movie.
It was an unbelievably compelling movie. It sort of showed two different species, the grizzly and the human being species. Mm-hmm. And it sounds kind of weird, but I really liked it.
Well, you know, I think they've got some exhibit at the London Zoo going on right now where they've put humans out in the zoo.
Oh, that would be really great. You'd be the best exhibit, I think.
Well, especially with the
watching your mating habits.
right.
Now, you'd never see any activity.
So they have the humans in the cage, and it's not a cage.
That would be
it's
me,
like
actually.
A
huh? Sorry, I was still on the last statement about mating activity. Sorry.
Oh, no.
I gotta speed up keep up with you.
Okie dokie. They've got them in some kind of exhibit area, and they gave them hula hoops, and evidently they were like bathing suits with fig leaves pinned on them.
You're not joking.
Funny. No, I'm serious.
These are real humans.
Yes, real humans.
Wow. Wonder how much they make. That'd be kind of a cool job.
No, I don't think it's a job. I think they did it as a, not necessarily a publicity stunt, but sort of to remind people that humans are animals too, and we're quite interesting animals, evidently.
Well, now, doesn't some of the things that Kansas wants to teach in their school opposite that? Are we really? What is it called? Intelligent design?
Intelligent design.
That's so funny. Well, anyway, the other movies I saw this week was a Japanese movie, and it was from the Asian Movie Festival at the Magnolia Theater. And I saw a movie from 2002, actually. It was not a new movie, called Dolls, directed by Beat Takeshi. And if anybody is familiar with Japanese movies, you'll know that director, Beat Takeshi, although I will have to admit I don't believe I've seen any of his other films.
I've never heard of him.
I really like this movie, but it's one of those movies that I just can't completely recommend to people. It's very slow. In fact, a good half of the movie is this sort of comatose couple, symbolically and literally, connected by this red rope between them, and they just walk around Japan.
That's it?
Like comatose people. That's it. And then they meet different people along the way, and there are three stories that are interspersed. And you know the background behind this couple, okay? So there's a little bit of, you know, it's kind of what's going on. But nevertheless, it's a movie full of symbolism, and it's a bit slow.
Hmm.
And the scenery is unbelievable. He has four seasons in Japan that these guys are walking through, and it's the most colorful four seasons you've ever seen. It's one of those movies, Pat, where I'm so glad that directors are around that still make these kind of movies, because it's not going to sell well. You know, it's slow, it's symbolic, it's almost like a Ingmar Bergman or something like that. For the 2 days after I saw the movie, I still had images, and I was thinking about some of the scenes, and you know, parts of it clung to me.
Wow, that sounds like a compelling movie.
Well,
I want to see it.
A lot of people will say they get bored through it, so it's hard for me to recommend, but like I said, I'm glad there are directors that try that and make movies like that that aren't necessarily going to be mass appeal.
Well, I get bored in car chases, as you know.
Yeah, you do.
We all have different limits of boredom, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But I liked it.
Well, you know, Susan and I watched a movie on Friday. I went over to her house. She had surgery, gallbladder surgery, on Tuesday.
Yes, she did.
She's doing well, though.
She's gallbladderless.
Evidently, you don't need one.
Evidently not.
So I went to her house, and we watched the series and season finale of 6 Feet Under.
Yes. You know, I still have yet to watch an episode, but I'm kind of glad it's done.
You've
now.
You've never seen one?
Nope, but I am planned and ready and cocked to start renting at Blockbuster the seasons. My parents don't have cable TV. They're very cheap. I can say that because they never listen to this podcast. But every now and then they'll rent, you know, the seasons of HBO shows, uh-huh. and they really, really liked
6 Feet Under.
The Sopranos.
Oh, The Sopranos.
And they really liked 6 Feet Under. They said, Jeff, it's probably the best show that they've ever seen.
So. I remember the first season it came out, I watched it over at Susan's house, and she and I were both totally blown away with it. We liked it a lot.
Yeah.
And then the problem was is that our schedules got screwed up, I don't know, and I don't think I've seen any in the last 3 years.
Oh.
And, you know, but she would tell me what was going on, so I knew what was going on, and I thought it was a really good series finale. I liked it a lot.
Susan told me a little bit about the season finale and sort of how they did it, and I don't think I'll give anything away, but it really does sound kind of creative and interesting and follows the whole theme of the series.
Yes.
Not that I've ever seen it, but from what I've heard. So it sounds kind of cool.
So anyway.
Those are Pat and Jeff's recommendations for the week. Go out, don't walk, run to your nearest whatever.
Well, and you know, last night I met you guys afterwards for drinks at the Starbucks.
We are funky, crazy, single, and free and wild. We meet at Starbucks on a Saturday night for drinks. And I had two drinks.
I had one and a half drinks.
I just drank too much last night.
Mine was like the ginseng lemonade, and it was okay.
We are pathetic.
It was $3. I couldn't believe it. I laughed. I said, wow, you know, $3. Hey, it's still, you know, soon gas is going to cost this much.
I don't know much about my history, Nick. Don't know much about my ology. Don't know much the science bootleg. Don't know much about the French I've been to. All I do know is I love you, Nick. And I wonder if you love me too. Oh, what a wonderful world it's gonna be. Ooh. I don't know much about geography.
I really laughed a lot when I heard that segment from Charlie Wardy about your introducing their podcast.
Yeah, Charlie, I don't know about that.
I thought it was funny. Anyway,
no, I liked it. It was funny.
They do a podcast called Israelisms. And
how do you say it again?
Has a hard time saying that word.
But you know what happens with me? I always want to say Israeli, you know, like what somebody from Israel is.
Uh-huh.
So I start off with Israeli, and then I realize I'm wrong. So in the middle of it, I change my tune to Israelisms, and that's why it all sounds screwed up.
Well, anyway, Charlie took your pronunciation of their show and put it up against, you know, he looped it and added some other things. It was pretty funny.
It was complete fun at my expense.
And I loved it. Jeff, I have my own disengagement issues going on right now in my house.
Really?
Yes.
Disengagement. So
disengagement.
You're just taking that Israelis. I did that on purpose. Don't put it in a loop, Charlie.
I said I have these issues going on, and they've happened already in the recent past, but I'm a little bit concerned that I may be facing the issue again.
Uh-huh.
But not in the long distant past. I had a gecko in my sink.
A gecko in, that sounds like a reggae song. Got the gecko in my sink, and I don't know what to do.
Anyway, the gecko was in my sink.
That's funny. That's classic. That's All right.
And I was thinking, what the heck am I going to do? Because, I mean, sure, I'm sure you men out there are thinking, just pick it up and take it out.
A gecko's tiny, right?
Yes, but yeah. I'm not picking up that creature.
And they don't bite or anything.
I don't care. It's a reptile. I'm not pulling it out. So I decided I was going to, I was taking different tactics to eliminate or
disengage.
Resettle. Or forcibly transfer my little gecko. I decided I'd wait him out.
Ah,
I was just going to see if maybe he
clever.
But the problem was he stuck in the sink and his little gecko webbed feet couldn't get the traction to get out of the sink.
Oh, he couldn't climb it up.
So then I tried intimidation. I thought to myself, well, maybe he needs to have a real reason to try harder. He wasn't trying hard enough. I tried spraying water on him and that wasn't working.
It just pissed him off.
Yes. Then I tried sanctions.
Uh-huh.
I decided there'd be no activity in the kitchen, no turning on the water. I wouldn't go in and out. He'd be there all alone. Maybe there would be no food, and that would motivate him.
Right.
Well, I started feeling guilty. I'm starving the poor gecko to death. And eventually, Jeff, I was deluged by organizations all wanting to help.
Wow.
I had
a lot of Red Cross efforts.
I had the Reptiles for the Ethical Treatment of Geckos come in.
Oh.
The Gecko Civil Liberties Union. The
wow.
Gecko's Rights Watch.
Wow.
And even Amnesty International.
I was wondering what those people picketing outside your house were.
They were telling me geckos are people too.
Yeah.
And they kept urging me to comply with Article 33 of the Fourth Gecko Convention.
Wow.
I mean, it was a nightmare.
I can't believe they pulled that one. That's low.
Jeff, it was a nightmare of confusing emotions. I wanted to help. I was afraid. I had a lot of pressure going on. And, it was just inevitably came the urgings and the demands. Okay,
oh, yeah.
So here came the demands. No handling of the gecko. Their skin is sensitive and easily damaged.
Oh.
They had specific temperature demands. I don't remember what they were, but, I was being urged to keep the kitchen sink a certain temperature.
Wow.
They wanted misting. They thought that I needed to mist occasionally.
Yeah.
And also, I needed to put in plants. And even artificial ones were okay, but I needed something to give the sink a natural look.
Right.
It was unacceptable the way it was.
Right.
But finally, lastly, this put it all down.
It all makes sense.
I needed to get a bed of beast.
A bed of beast? What's
yes.
that?
It's this product that you buy for your reptiles.
Oh.
And I'm thinking,
to make them friendly and comfortable because
I guess,
you can't disengage them.
It was, like I said, things were getting out of hand.
Right.
But luckily I did have some support. People in my neighborhood, they held candlelight vigils in support of me and my rights. I mean, it is my kitchen after all.
Right. You paid for it.
There was a 2-minute moment of silence held so that everybody could remember that it's not just about geckos and their needs.
Very good.
And lastly, there was a Give Pat Her Kitchen Sink Back walkathon.
Wow.
Yes.
I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't
well,
have walked.
But I wasn't sure all this activity was helping, but I was distraught and the support kept me strong. In fact, here, Jeff, I'd like to give you one of my green wristbands, Support
oh,
Pat.
Oh, I'll wear it.
Yeah. You can also purchase a rubber bracelet and Beanie Baby gift set if you'd like.
Cool.
Yeah. So, anyway. But, Jeff, the pressure was taking its toll on me, and finally I decided I needed to do something, so I decided to talk to my dad about it, because my dad knows a lot.
Yep.
And I was explaining to him the situation. And, that's what it is when you talk to smart people like my dad. He said the problem is the friction. He can't get out of the sink, that I needed to help the gecko help himself. So he suggested I take a paper towel and wet it and lay it in the sink. And then,
because he could get traction on the paper towel.
Exactly.
Versus a ceramic.
Encourage the gecko to go up the paper towel.
Now that's thinking. That's using the old noggin.
Exactly. And sure enough, it worked. The gecko left. But, I did have to make a deal with him. I said, you can live anywhere you want. I'd like for you to maybe handle the roach situation if you don't mind. But please don't come back into the sink again.
All right.
So I've been pretty happy, except I think 2 nights ago, I think I saw the gecko in the sink.
Well, you may
He's
have
come back.
Something he wants. right?
Well, I don't know what to do about it, Jeff. I mean, I thought the situation was resolved. It was handled very well.
Now, is this whole thing a metaphor for something?
No, this really happened.
It's a gecko. It's a gecko story.
The gecko disengagement.
So what are you going to do now?
Well, I don't know. I like I said, it was two nights ago when I thought I saw him. I haven't seen him lately, so.
You should just repeat the same paper towel trick.
Well, yeah, that's what I'll do. But he wouldn't be coming back if he didn't have more demands.
Right.
But I'm not going to get a betta beast. Forget about it. It sounds nasty anyway.
Yes, it does.
Betta beast.
You want a betta beast? That's what I say to all the women. Hey, baby, you want a betta beast?
And does it get you anywhere when you use that line?
No, it doesn't.
Aww. But it's kind of fun to say.
It's fun to
betta
say.
Betta beast.
Betta beast.
Alrighty then.
All right, I have another pet peeve.
A pet peeve.
This one really isn't a pet peeve, but it's an observation that makes me laugh.
Let's hear it.
And everybody can relate to this. All right, so I have this, we had sweets day. I think it was 2 weeks ago at the office, right? And they have all these sweets. And I grabbed myself a couple Snickers candy bars.
That's all right? What you got on sweets day?
They had all kinds of stuff. They had Twinkies, they had Ho-Hos. I had a Twinkie, too.
Oh, okay.
And it was like, I realized, oh, my God, these are bad. You know, I liked them as a kid, but, boy, they just don't work for an adult. Anyways, so I grabbed a couple candy bars for later. Monday morning, I came in. I stared at the Snickers bar, and, you know, I'm trying to eat healthy, and I thought, I'm just going to put this back. So I went back into the break room, and it was kind of an experiment, too, and I just put it on the table. Mm-hmm. And then 10 minutes later, I came back, and it was gone. I knew it would be. But so it's just amazing to me what you can put out in a break room and people will take. Very, very quickly. It goes fast.
Did you have a sign that said, take me?
No.
Huh.
It's just assumed to be common. And that's what I meant. I meant it for somebody to take it. But I got to thinking, I want to run some experiments. And I haven't done this yet, but I'm thinking about doing it. Like, if I have, like, half-eaten stew or something that I have left over here, I think I'll just take it in, put it on the table, and see what happens.
What about a half-eaten piece of pie?
Exactly. Because, you know, there is, like, we'll have people in for lunch sometime, and there'll be, like, the very last pickings of sandwiches mm-hmm. that the people will set out that have been out there for 2 or 3 hours mm-hmm. at, like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they look gross, and they're full of mayonnaise that could be bad.
Oh.
You come back, it's gone. So I do think we should run some experiments.
And hey, what about the burned oatmeal that you made today? Put that out there.
I burned my oatmeal today, yeah. That would be so cool. I should try that. I threw it away already. I put it in the garbage disposal.
You could make it again.
Yeah, I could.
Anyway.
My special recipe for burned oatmeal. Make your oatmeal and just keep it there and go get lost on the internet while you're researching for the show. That's my recipe. That'd be good eating. Mm. And it smelled good too, didn't
it,
Pat?
Yes, it did.
Made my place smell all nice and...
I'm still gagging.
I know. So, but I thought maybe I could make... I mean, I'm just thinking if you brought in like candy and so much candy, Pat, that it just like... fill the room. So when you went into the room, you had to like wade through it. It's up to your stomach, you know? It's all full of candy.
Wow.
I would bet that if you did that in the morning and you came back in the afternoon, I'll bet it would be like knee high. I mean, it just changes my whole concept of throwaway food. I'm never throwing away food again. I'm just taking it to the break room. Right? Yum.
So I'm listening to public radio this morning.
Right.
And they're talking to this guy from MIT.
Okay.
And he has a product out there. It's called a jerkometer.
A jerkometer.
Jerkometer.
How does the product work, Pat?
It's a device that analyzes speech patterns and voice tones to rate people, you know, from on a scale from 0 to 100% on how engaged they are in a conversation.
So they could take our podcast and really find out that I'm not, I tune you off half the time.
Well, you know, I looked a little bit more into this, and basically there are four types of vocal social signals that they did these mathematical models on. And as a matter of fact, Jeff, they did Markov chains on them.
Ah, I remember Markov chains, full of probability.
One of the vocal social signals that they used was designated activity level. So they recorded people talking, and they separated into vocalization and non-vocalization. They were looking at when you talked, how long you talked, and how often you talked, the number of times you talked. And
okay.
They were going to come up with some, you know, they did a Markov chain on that.
Right.
Another vocal social signal was engagement. And that was, they measured how well you took turns in talking. So I talk, then you talk, I talk, then you talk. So they look at that.
Huh.
Then they also looked at stress. And this was kind of an interesting thing. They called it, they measured the variation in prosodic emphasis. I bet you didn't even know what prosodic meant, right?
Well, I know, but tell the audience.
It means of or relating to the rhythmic aspects of language or to the suprasegmental phonemes of pitch and stress and juncture and nasalization and voicing.
And what does that mean to the common person?
I got no idea.
I got nothing on that.
Well, I think what it means is that maybe as you, if you're stressed out, maybe you talk faster. Maybe there are specific things that happen to your voice when you're stressed out.
Well, you know, a lot of that technology has already been developed, you know, to detect people lying, right?
Yes, that's true. And then the final signal that they looked at was mirroring. And mirroring is something that is supposed to help signal empathy, for example.
Right.
So somebody, if they're paying attention to you, then they'll say things like, uh-huh, okay, yep, and they're showing agreement.
Like I do.
Exactly.
But I do
like
it on automatic pilot. I have no idea what you just said. I just go, yeah, uh-huh,
well,
right.
they developed these mathematical models, Jeff, and in the paper that I read, they were actually talking about using this stuff in terms of, I mean, sorry, they talked about using it in conjunction with that speed dating, so whether or not you'd be able to tell if the person was going to want to go out with you or not.
That's that speed dating thing where you sit at a table for like 5 minutes and then move on to the next one and meet somebody else.
Yes.
Have you ever done that?
No.
Me neither.
Anyway, so what they've got going on now is they have a prototype of this thing. It runs on Linux on a phone plugged into voiceover internet services.
All right.
And the idea is that it's measuring you and telling you when you're being a jerk.
Okay, so they sum all these mathematical, these complex mathematical procedures, these four different parameters, the complex Markov chain, and they sum it down into a jerk number.
Exactly. And so, you know, it tells you if you're being a jerk or, you know, maybe you should be a little nicer. And if you've done a really, really good job at the end, it tells you, wow, you're a smooth talker.
Can we plug it into our podcast?
Well, who knows? You know, they've got all kinds of things going on about that. But they had some other interesting things that they talked about. It said, you know, what they did is they took 20 people. They had men talking to men and women talking to women. And they monitored 200 three-minute conversations. And then everybody had to rate – I guess they did this as part of developing this thing. Then they had to rate the level of interest on a scale of 1 to 10. And here's what I thought was interesting. The subject of the chat – was more important to men than women. For women, it was more whether they rated the chat interesting or not was more dependent on whom they were talking with and their state of mind.
Huh. Okay. Interesting.
But men, most of the time, the topic has to be interesting to them.
Wow.
Otherwise, they're not interested.
Very interesting.
Although I'm thinking that if I talk to more men wearing these implants.
Yes.
Then it really wouldn't matter what I said.
It might not. You'd think they'd have a parameter for that, like, you know, how good looking is the person you're talking to? That can be distracting sometimes.
It could be. Well, anyway, the jerkometer is, I think they're also looking at being able to, because right now it rates you.
Right.
And what's happening in your conversation. But now they're thinking about how they can also engage the other person as part of their evaluation so that they can tell you something like, this person is acting like a jerk. Would you like to hang up on them now?
So how, is there any commercial at this point? Any commercial properties of this? Can you go out and buy a sample program to take on a date with you, for example?
Well, I don't know. Like I said, they've got a prototype out there. And the guy who wrote this paper is in a company with his advisor.
Because I've always thought, and you probably thought this thing too, you know, you go out on a date and you think you're fine, and then you don't hear from the person, or the person's not interested, and you wonder, well, you know, maybe it's just not chemistry, whatever, but you wonder, was it something I said? I thought I was nice and pleasant, but was it something I said? Wouldn't it be great to have the jerkometer tell you, yeah, you know, you came across as aggressive or not interested at this point in the conversation? It's like, boom, I can learn that. I didn't mean to, certainly, but...
Well,
you know?
I think that's more sophisticated than what it does right now. It's just going to tell you, you know, you can watch it and probably, the thing about it that's weird is you know how you feel. You know if you're not interested in something. You don't need a device telling you that you're being a jerk. So I don't know. Maybe what it's telling you is it's letting you know that you're being a jerk, and probably the other person knows you're being a jerk.
Or maybe it's just letting you know that the other person is being a jerk. But again, you can probably pick that up, especially it sounds like if it's been calibrated by human observations. So I guess maybe we don't know what the value really is, except it's in the pursuit of higher knowledge of human behavior.
Yes, that's the value.
Yeah. So, you know, it'll end up migrating into something.
Well, I think it'd be fun.
I want to plug our podcast in there and see who's the biggest, who is the biggest jerk of us. I think it's Pat.
I think it's you.
I think it's Pat. It's Pat.
I think it's time that we listen to the genre of the week.
Pat, you're right. It is time for the genre of the week.
Yay.
And today's genre is Philly soul. And that's not Philly soul cheesesteak.
I probably heard this last week at least twice.
You heard it twice during our engineering difficulties.
So, I can't wait to hear it again.
So try to be surprised. This was one of the popular forms of soul music in the early 70s. Built on a steady groove of high records and Stax Volt singles, of course. Who is Stax Volt?
Otis Redding.
Otis, our man. So it's kind of based on some of that type of soul. But Philly soul added sweeping strings, seductive horns,
Ooh.
And lush arrangements. So it's more highly produced. It was definitely considered smoother, even slicker than, say, the deep soul of the late 60s, or compared to the more funky and gritty southern and deep soul styles. The vocals remained as soulful as any medium, though. Kenny Gable and Leon Huff and Tom Bell created the instrumental textures that came to distinguish the genre. So you can really tell what this genre sounds like. But some of the voices, Pat, are just spectacular. The early 70s artists that did a lot of this were the Spinners, the OJs, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, and the Stylistics. And I loved Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. But let me play a little bit of Stylistics. This is from 1971.
I don't think I was born then.
In your eyes, candy land appears each time you smile. Never thought that fairy tales came true, but they come true when I'm near you. You're a genie in disguise.
What a great song.
Is that nice or what?
Candyland.
Isn't that beautiful? I'm going to play another one from 1972, and this would be the OJs.
Backstabbers, they're smiling in your face.
All the time they want to take your place, the backstabbers.
Remember this song?
Yes.
All you fellas who have someone and you really care, yeah. Then it's all in your fellas who better beware, yeah. So light is out to get you.
You're shaking those things again. And finally, here's a little bit of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes from 1972.
Maybe I know the difference between right and wrong. I ain't gonna do nothing to upset our happy home. Like children, when we argue,
Well, what do you think about Philly Soul, Pat?
I think it's great.
All right. You know, I first heard Philly Soul when I heard Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. And just a couple of years ago, I mean, I've heard them since I was a kid, but I heard this song on the radio called Wake Up Everybody 2 years ago, and I was so inspired by this song that I did my own version of it.
Ah, you covered it.
I covered it in a reggae pop style.
How interesting.
Actually, a lot of people in my music news group said that they liked the version better than Harold Melvin, but it's not. I'll be the first one to say it is not. But I'm going to play it at the very end of this show, so if you want to hang on and listen to it, you can. I did want to make a comment on Philly Soul, though. My thoughts on it were the voices were absolutely superb, and I'm going to go in a later show and talk about 70s music, and a lot of what I say about Philly Soul extends generally to 70s music, but I won't get into the reasons in this show. But what I find is Philly Soul has great voices. The production is a little bit much for me, all the strings and all the lush background vocals and stuff. I like it, but I would like it. I like things stripped down a little bit more. What do you think?
Well, I like the lush orchestration and all that baloney.
Okay. And then finally, I found the songs, the melodies to be tremendous. But in general, I found the lyrics to be pretty cheesy.
Cheesy.
In most cases. In fact, the song that I covered, Wake Up Everybody, for the most part, it's got great inspirational lyrics. But even in that song, there was one whole verse I had to write myself. I had to throw it away and write another verse because it was so cheesy.
That's funny.
I know, it is funny.
Were the lines better than the ones you did? Were the lines kind of on par with the ones you did for Doggy Ball's Gotta Go? Hey ho.
Hey ho, hey, hey ho. Well, that was a classic.
Because those are not cheesy lyrics. Those are stellar lyrics.
They're sensitive and deeply touching lyrics, which is my forte, as you can tell. All right, that is your genre of the week. Well, it's time, Pat.
It's time to hear from our correspondent.
Correspondent. Is that the right word for him?
No, he might be a columnist.
How about audio columnist?
Our audio columnist.
David Lobig from Random Digressions is going to talk about what, Pat?
Well, a product that he ran into, I guess, or not really ran into, but he found.
Okay, let's give it a listen.
Sometimes when you hear about something funny, you want to tell everybody. But if it's just inappropriate, you don't. So I'm going to tell you anyway. I got hold of a new product. Well, I really didn't get hold of it. It's not the kind of thing you want to get hold of. I should say I saw a new product. I don't want to be sophomoric about it. Okay, I really don't mind that. In fact, I want to tell you about it precisely because it is, rather unsophisticated in its humor. From those hints alone, you probably already figured it out. You must have read about it in Life and Newsweek and the Oprah magazine. What could it be? That's right. It's the rectal rocket, a real medical device for applying medications in certain places. Actually, in one particular place. The literature, and yes, there is literature on such things, says it facilitates simultaneous internal and external administration of medications. See, I told you it was unsophisticated humor. I was as surprised as you when I first saw this, I can't even say the name, when I first saw this product. There I was, walking the aisles of a health fair, studying the wares and services available for my comfort and well-being. In flash, from a nearby booth, a computer screen flickered the words as big as day. Actually, as big as 56-point Times New Roman font. But it left the glowing imprint of the words rectal rocket on my retinas. My first reaction was probably a puckering sensation. But my second reaction was one of curiosity. How could this particular device serve my comfort and well-being? I wasn't going to pass up a conversation like this, so I stopped at the booth and inquired. Amy, my pharmacy educator, was very professional as she explained how it applied medication, how it differed from alternative products, and how it had a gas release channel. She didn't know the note. However, I considered offering my research services, but she was being quite gracious and polite, so I thought the better and chose to save her from such drivel. I'm still curious, though. Later that day, I tried explaining to a friend that I saw this thing called a rectal rocket and that a woman had shown this product to me, but my story sounded dirty. So I explained that I had a picture taken of me and the nice woman with this device, and that sounded even worse. I even explained that she was a pharmacy educator, and that only made my friend wonder if my fanciful imagination had gotten the best of me. I really had my picture taken with Amy on this product. I'm not sure she was as thrilled as I was, but she was a good sport about it and kept her courteous smile, so I've got to give her credit. Besides, she's very pretty, and I would have considered asking her out, but there are two problems. One, she would laugh uncontrollably at the mere idea of it. And two, I would imagine the rectal rocket every time I'd see her. And of course, I'd have to bring it up at the most inappropriate times. If only she had worked at a different booth with a different product. But alas, that's how fate works. We all must play the hand we're dealt, so in the end, I am left only with my fond memories of Amy and that product.
All right. Thanks, Dave. That was great.
Yeah.
Always funny.
I'm not sure I want to buy a rectal rocket.
Well, you have one.
I do.
Don't you? You're sitting on it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. I'm just being silly. I just want our listeners to visualize Pat with her new Bristol implant. She's playing with them the whole time. The whole time we're in the studio, she's playing with them, trying to make me laugh, I think, and I'm not going to do it.
It's kind of fun to, like, squish them up and make and hold them out, you know?
Yeah. You know what she said to me when we were off air? I thought it was funny. She said, when I move, it actually jiggles my clothes. This must be what it feels like to have real big boobies. She's like a kid in a candy store right now.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I did want to comment really fast because we're running out of time about a TV show that I've watched for 2 weeks now, and it's called Tommy Lee Goes to College. It's a reality show.
Are you still watching it?
I watched the second week of it, which I guess is the third episode because the first week they played two episodes. Let me tell you what I liked and then what I didn't like. First of all, I liked the portrayal of University of Nebraska and Lincoln, our friends in Borderline. In fact, they were kind of worried about how their campus would be portrayed. But Pat, I don't know if you remember what it was like where you went to college. I went to University of Illinois, big campus, big, beautiful, you know, a Big Ten campus. Nebraska's campus is much like it. It reminded me of it. And I saw all these new students getting and moving into their dorms. And it brought me back to a certain joyful and stressful part of growing up. But that was going to the Big U. And, you know, it was exciting. Now, the show itself just kind of sucks. It really does. I mean, Tommy Lee isn't applying himself to do anything. He did make the marching band 1 week, you know, where he's playing drums. But even then, you know, they just basically let him in because he doesn't practice. He doesn't study. It's really stupid. It's really stupid.
Kind of absurd that they're making this show at all. I mean, there can't be anything authentic about it.
I know. And I would listen to the Borderline guys that they said that Tommy Lee was actually only at the university for a total of 3 weeks. And the way they're cutting it, it looks like, you know, he's going through a whole semester or a whole year or something. I won't watch it again, but
good.
I did
God.
Like seeing campus and all the kids. It brought me back.
7-Eleven. Thank heaven. 7-Eleven. Thank heaven. It's time for Pat 7-Eleven update.
Well, this week, because we're running out of time and we don't really have that much, we're going to skip the Dallas Minute, but we do have a little bit of a 7-Eleven update, right?
Yes, I went this morning on my way to your house, and I had one of the chocolate caramel lattes. They have a little recipe out there. So you put 3/4 of a cup of regular coffee in there, and then you put in their steamed milk.
Wow.
And then they had these special flavorings, you know, like those special I don't know what the heck they're called, but you can buy them at the grocery store. Anyway, they're really small, and it's chocolate caramel.
Cool.
And you put it in there, and it was yummy. And it only cost $1.40, unlike the lemonade I had at Starbucks for $3 last night.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know how you drink your coffee so sweet. But there you go.
It was yummy.
It was yummy. Highly recommended. Okay.
Yes. Well, Jeff, I think that's going to wrap it up for us today, don't you?
I think it is. I think we got to get going, get out of here. Listen, we do want to make some acknowledgments. I've got a pretty long list here of people that emailed us, phoned us, commented on the blog. So let me just go through and thank everybody because it means a lot to hear the feedback.
A couple of people I had phone sex with.
Yeah, I think you did this week, didn't you? Akosan, Charlie from Israelisms. Hey, Brad R., Gary from Podcast Pickle. I do want to mention we're going to be out at the Podcast Portable Media Conference in November. and apparently we're going to be broadcasting live.
Live!
For 2 different days. We have like 20-minute segments at the Podcast Pickle booth, so that'll be kind of fun.
Should I bring my silicone push-up pads?
I don't think you're ever going to get rid of those things now. Way too much fun with them. So come stop by if you're out in California during I don't know when it is exactly. I should know this, but it's in November sometime.
Early November.
Come out and see us and help support the live podcast and see Pat's new toys. Chris B and Chris from James Daddy, CB, Roger A, Kevin from Radio Filibuster, Brad P, our good friend Brad P, Ferg as always from AirFerg.com, Tom T, Mark, Neil, but not the borderline Neil. Neil's the one that gave us a ton of feedback on our show. That was
interesting.
Took a lot of time and was really good. So I appreciate that. Michelle, Lindsay from deconstruction.org, another podcast I'm enjoying a lot. Neil and Danny, of course, from Borderline. And Paul J. from Rev Up Review. Give us some kind words. So I want to thank everybody. Our phone number, if you'd like to leave us a voice message, is 206-202-TALK. That's 206-202-8255.
You can reach me at Pat at thisandthatpodcast.com.
And you can reach me at Jeff at thisandthatpodcast.com. And you can reach us together at Jeff and Pat at thisandthatpodcast.com. I know we need a new way to say that because there's too many email addresses. People are confused. We do have a blog. We're trying to get better at updating it. And that's at www.thisandthatpodcast.com. You'll see our podcast there. You can play us real time or you can visit our blog and see all kinds of funny things about us. So check it out.
Thanks a lot. I've had a great time.
Thanks a lot. Hey, and I think the month is starting. By the time we get to next week, it'll be the new month. So don't forget to vote for us if you would be so kind. That'd be kind of cool.
We'd appreciate it.
Yeah, we would.
And tell your friends about our show.
Probably more important, you know, that's the one thing. I always think about this and always forget to tell you guys. It's the most important thing through any podcast is word of mouth. So if you guys can, if you like this show, tell some of your friends that they think they might dig it as well and just grow the family.
Well, I'm looking forward to listening to your song, Jeff. The one with the better lyrics than what the OJs or what? Who was it?
Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Better than the Blue Notes.
All right. So, yeah, hang on and take a listen to that after the closing music's done. All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
To find a way to bring some loving here today. Wake up, all the builders. Time to build a new land. Change it, just you and me.